Welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast, your audio source for what's going on in the Chicago theater scene. This is the episode for September 15th, 2008, and on this episode, we have an interview with Chicago theater critic Richard Christensen. Also, we have Chicago's theater news for you, so get ready, and let's talk theater.
I'm Ann Nicholson Weber, and this is Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. This week, I'm very pleased to welcome Richard Christensen, who has been a theater reviewer in Chicago since the early 60s, culminating in his position as the chief critic at the Chicago Tribune. And he's also the author of a new book called A Theater of Our Own, A History and Memoir of 1001 Nights in Chicago. Welcome, Richard.
Thank you.
You've been on the scene for, as I said, decades and have a real sense of the history that I think a lot of newer Chicago artists in the theater world don't have. And there are two projects that I'm aware of that you're involved in that relate to the history of Chicago. One is this book, which is a wonderful summing up of a pivotal point in the development of Chicago theater. And the other is more a gleam in your eye and the eyes of a few others, which is the notion of a Chicago Performing Arts Museum or Theater Museum. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to talk about both of those things. Maybe we could start with the forward-looking project, which is the the idea of a museum for Chicago Performing Arts or Chicago Theater. Could you talk a little bit about both what your conception is and where the project stands, who else is involved? Could you just give us a little background on that idea?
Well, at the moment, it's just in my head, and it's not a reality. But what I would like to see happen someday in Chicago, because the city deserves that kind of attention, is a substantial museum of the performing arts for Chicago. I've been noodling around with this for some time simply because I felt that the city still undervalues the benefits that come from a strong performing arts presence in our community. It is a long history, and in the last several decades it has been a very strong presence, not only in theater but also in music and dance and other performing arts. And I would like to see a museum to preserve some of that history. Too much of it goes by the wayside unless we preserve it. And unless we have that kind of presence that we are able to look at and see what made the city so vital and vibrant as a center of performing arts, I'm afraid we will lose sight of the future unless we know about the past very well. So my vision for it at this point is to have a large, substantial museum, fully funded, no storefront operation, but a big operation. And I don't think this is too much of a thing to ask because other cities have done it in other ways. In New York City, the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts, which is in Lincoln Center,
right,
is a very, very good repository, not only of print archival material, but also of video and audio recordings of the performing arts in New York City. If you are doing research in any kind of theater project in New York, that's the place to go because you know you can find it. And in places such as, well, Cleveland, for example, has the Rock and Roll Museum. And, if Cleveland can do it, why couldn't Chicago have something comparable to it?
Mm-hmm.
Essence of a museum, it seems to me, is not only to preserve the past, but to encourage the present and look forward to the future. And I would therefore want to have not only a splendid collection of memorabilia and artifacts from the Chicago's history, but also a kind of living presence in daily or even perhaps weekly programs of the performing arts, by which I mean you could do some staged readings of plays. You could do some choral work. I mean, Chicago has one of the richest histories of gospel music in the country. You could do music, both popular and classical, chamber music perhaps, and jazz and pop music recitals. All of this could be presented not only for tourists, but for residents of the city and the suburbs so that they can see. And by having this, it would seem to me you would be able to dip into glorious past that Chicago has had in the performing arts. There are centers for this kind of material in Chicago. The Chicago Public Library Special Collections and the Harold Washington Library on the 9th floor has one of the best archives of theater performances in Chicago. Both, I think, Goodman and Steppenwolf have put their archives at the library. And the Chicago History Museum, the Newberry Library, and other various libraries and museums across the city have got their own collections. But there's no central place for it, and that's right. What I would like to see happen. Mm-hmm. The wealth of material is there. I don't think there's any question about that. Even if you were to be suddenly cut off from everything that has gone in the past, you would find individuals in this city who have huge collections of posters, programs, other memorabilia of theater experiences that they've had. And the same with music and dance. You find all of that. The Newberry Library, for example, has a huge collection of dance memorabilia from the collection of Anne Barzell, the late dance critic. So you would need a place to funnel all that material, categorize it, and display it. One of the pleasures I get in going abroad is to see what other countries do with that. If there was a wonderful exhibit, for example, at the Librairie Nationale of France in Paris of Sarah Bernhardt. And it was not only a visual of photographs and documents from her career, but they had audio recordings, very early audio recordings of her voice, so that wow. You got a hint of that silvery tone that her voice had. Well, you know, why not do this in Chicago? Why not have a kind of early record of such groundbreaking theaters as the Organic Theater, the Body Politic, Wisdom Bridge, and so on, all those theaters that contributed so much to the growth of resident Chicago theater in Chicago. It would be wonderful to have that. And since I talk mostly about theater, I don't want to exclude music and dance. I mean, you've got amazing videos of dance, for example, in Chicago that are available that have been recorded and shown on television, and that could be channeled into the museum. It would be not only an exhibition for popular consumption, but a resource for scholars and authors who want to delve deeper into the history of the performing arts in Chicago. And I say again, it's important to realize how much benefit the performing arts have been for Chicago. Not only in the usual, you know, spiritual and intellectual and cultural ways, but in sheer economic force and in sheer social power that they have exerted in the city. And to recognize that a museum for the performing arts, it seems to me, would be an ideal way to go.
What is the importance? I mean, both your book and this idea are about preserving a history and making it available. Why is that important?
Well, you know, unless we know the past, we're doomed to repeat the mistakes of the past, or as the famous saying goes. But it's also a question of knowing that what's happening now has a rich antecedent in history, that the off-loop theater movement really had its roots in perhaps in the early part of the 20th century with the advent of Jane Addams Hull House Theater and the Little Theater in the Fine Arts Building at 410 South Michigan, both of which were dedicated to presenting work from the community, from the city itself, using the talent at hand and trying to reflect the community in which they were situated. So I come into people, young people at the theater these days who barely remember the beginning of Steppenwolf.
I mean,
you know, you have to realize how the incredible, phenomenal growth of a small theater like that into a juggernaut of international importance. And the same way with the Second City, which is about to celebrate its 50th anniversary in 2009. Unless you know how those things originated and that there is a long line of tradition behind them in many respects, then, you know, you're just spinning your wheels. And you have no idea of what a rich heritage you have behind you. And it gives you some guidance for the future, mm-hmm. both in the promise and the mistakes that the earlier efforts were prone to.
I was in London and went to the National, and I think the London theater world has a huge sense of history, you know, that all the way back to Shakespeare, obviously.
Indeed they do.
And that feeling of heritage is much more part of the British culture, I think, mm-hmm. than it is here. We tend to always want to be doing the next new thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you're saying, though, that you really lose something by that you not having that sense of joining a grand tradition, which we really have here.
Well, and also just consider the fun of it. I mean,
right.
Wouldn't you like to go and see a visual history of one of the great theaters of Chicago, perhaps dating back to the 1920s with the foundation of the Goodman Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see how it evolved into what it is today here on North Dearborn Street. I mean, that to me, that would be fun to do. And you could do it with not only visual material, but you know, audio recordings and so on. You could have interacting with computers and so on. The possibilities are endless for museum activity these days.
Do you know how other similar institutions got started? What it took to make something like this happen?
Well, the New York Public Library was behind, of course, the Library for the Performing Arts in New York. And they early on realized that there had to be some repository for all the material. All Broadway shows, as I understand it, are videotaped just with one standard camera. It's not for television broadcast. But if you want to see what the original production of an important show was, at least you've got that one camera shot of it. And there were tons of people in New York City who had their own archival material that was very important. Martha Swope pictures, great theater photographer Martha Swope had photographs. The Billy Rose collection, the producer Billy Rose, there's lots of stories and material on the theater of the 30s and 40s in New York. So they said, well, we've got to find a place for this, and they did in this very, very fine library for the performing arts. The sad part of this is there was a theater museum in London, a spinoff from the Victoria and Albert Museum, the big historical museum in London. And that unfortunately folded because it just didn't get the funding that it needed.
Mm-hmm.
So there are perils in this. You have to have a real commitment for going to it. Unless it pays its way both as a psychological input and an economic input, why then you're doomed to failure. But I think there's such a great impetus for such a museum here that there wouldn't be any problem. Just think of the advantages for an out-of-town visitor to come. They go to the cultural center, perhaps, and they see things. But going to a museum itself would be just a kick.
Yeah. something that, again, tried to somehow sum up what Chicago theater is and has been and open people's eyes to more than, you know, Broadway and Chicago downtown or the biggest of the institutional theaters, which are wonderful, of course, but there's so much more to our theater scene.
Well, we have to have a sense of history to have a sense of value of what we are.
Yeah,
I mean, there are all sorts of small museums in Chicago dedicated to medicine, for example, but there's nothing really to grab the attention for this mighty force of the performing arts in Chicago. And as I say, it's not only theater. It's dance, both pop and classic. It's jazz, pop music, classical music. The whole history of classical music in Chicago is fascinating, from the days of Theodore Thomas and the founding of the Chicago Symphony up to the present, with all sorts of small and vital musical organizations performing in Chicago. And you get a sense of how rich the heritage has been and how promising the future can be.
Now, I've heard the argument made that we should, if the kinds of resources that would take would be better used on nurturing theater going forward, the present artists and the future artists. Do you have an answer to that?
Well, thus ever. I mean, people say, well, why do we need this? What we need is to fund the people's in going forward with their own work in the present and in the future. Well, I'm all for that. But, what's wrong with having a museum at the same time? And as I say, the museum would not only be a place of dormant material, it would be, I would hope so, have a kind of performing situation where you could go in perhaps on a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday matinee and hear and see something live, which represents the city as a performing arts center. I don't see that people saying, well, we shouldn't fund the Art Institute because that's just paintings of the past.
Right.
I mean, that would be considered heresy for most people. Well, I would apply that to it.
Well, there is a difference, which is that the painting from the past still lives. The performances don't live. What we have is
bits of records.
Sure.
You have records of those performances.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. Well, I mean, I agree with you that it feels like, first of all, on the other hand, many people say, well, of course we should. Why didn't this seem so obvious as soon as it's said? So there is a great deal of enthusiasm. And it does feel like maybe this is the time. Does it feel like that to you, that this is the moment that this could happen?
It's certainly a moment when Chicago theater has got perhaps its highest profile ever. Ever since the 70s, when the off-loop movement started developing, Chicago's reputation has grown steadily. It was bolstered considerably when the Second City people started going out from Chicago into New York and movies and television, and it was further bolstered in the 80s when Steppenwolf had a couple of breakthrough productions that moved to New York, True West, Orphans, and Baum and Gilead, of course. But this past couple years has been really extraordinary for Chicago because of two big factors. One being the amazing, phenomenal success of Wicked, the touring production of Wicked, which decided to sit down in Chicago instead of moving on to the next city. And in January, it will depart finally after 3.5 years in Chicago, having grossed something like $200 million and I don't know how many thousands of customers passing through the till to see that show at the Ford Center for the Performing Arts Oriental Theater. And that has called attention to the fact that this is a big market for theater.
Mm-hmm.
The Broadway and Chicago people who sponsor Wicked can point to the fact that every week they would get representatives from all 50 states of the United States of America, plus foreign countries. And they also say that a substantial portion of hotel room nights are booked by people who come to Chicago specifically to see shows downtown.
Mm-hmm.
That has emblazoned on the minds of everybody in Chicago and also in New York, which sends out these tours, that there is a big cash register here in Chicago that they can tap into with the right kind of show. Now, A Wicked does not come along every year. And Jersey Boys is going to have another long run here. Those are, you know, rare enough shows. But it did show that Chicago had the audience and the interest in going to the theater in these big downtown theaters. The other thing that brought Chicago to such attention now is, of course, the phenomenal success of Tracy Letts's drama August Osage County, which had a very successful run in Chicago at Steppenwolf Theater, where it originated, and then had an even more successful and is still having a more successful run in New York on Broadway. In November, it will go to the National Theatre of Great Britain in London for a two-month run. I think even people who have very, very limited knowledge of the theatre know the name Steppenwolf now because mm-hmm. of August Osage County. So it has given theatre a greater recognition factor than it has ever had, it seems to me, in Chicago. Every once in a while that happens in Chicago. You get a show that takes off and makes a name for itself on a international basis. 10 years ago, it was director Robert Fall's production of Death of a Salesman with Brian Dennehy, which had a huge success at the Goodman, went to Broadway, London, Los Angeles, and said, oh, this is great Chicago theater. Mm-hmm. So The point being that with the tremendous marketplace and the high recognition factor of resident theater in Chicago, the time is ripe now, it would seem to me, to say, hey, let's keep this rolling and let's try to make something out of that high profile that we now have.
Does the Lincoln Center Library have materials that extend beyond the Broadway and the really big shows in New York, do you know?
Yes, it does. It's known best, of course, for those big Broadway shows. But it does have a pretty good record of everything. The thing about Chicago is, you know, at the League of Chicago Theaters, which keeps track of the community itself, claims that there are about 200 theaters, large and small, everywhere from the big downtown theaters to the 50-seat storefront theaters. And there's such a variety of theater in Chicago that you need to get it all in one place because it's so scattered. It's a vast marketplace, in other words.
Right.
The necessity for picking even the smallest theater is important because who knows what's going to happen to those small theaters.
Right.
Steppenwolf at one time was performing in a church basement, right. And now look at them. So it's necessary, I think, to keep good track of everything.
Really be all-encompassing,
which
is certainly a big project. Perhaps more possible here than New York, because as big as ours is, it's not as big as New York.
Well, and it's more interesting, I think, to see what what has done. One of the things you could do was look at some of the early efforts of the actors, actresses, musicians, and dancers who got their start in Chicago mm-hmm. and some of whom are still performing in Chicago, and watch the growth of their careers.
Yes,
fascinating.
Right.
Absolutely fascinating.
That's one of the joys of going to a repertory theater like Stratford in Ontario and watching the chorus member become the star over a couple of decades.
Sure.
And if you could recreate that archivally, that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, for people to see what Deanna Dunnigan was doing all these years before
sure.
she was on the Tony Award stage. And
fortunately, in the 70s and early 80s, some of these shows were actually taped for public television by WTTW. We have a record, for example, of the original cast of Bleacher Bums, the seminal play by the Organic Theater, which was taped by WTTW and broadcast. So, unfortunately, that kind of entrepreneurship and initiative is gone now. People don't want to spend that kind of money. I wish they would. WTTW should do things like that.
Well, there's also a company called HMS.
Yes, and they're working with the Joseph Jefferson Awards Committee to try to put together some kind of overall series on Chicago theater. I'm all for it. I think that's fine.
I mean, of course, a video of a play is only a very pale representation of what the experience
was. Yes, but
you
can get a good flavor from it. If you mm-hmm. watch the Bleacher Bums, you know why this was such a wonderful play.
Yeah.
You get a feeling for that.
Yeah. Well, let's talk for a minute about your book. I was thinking as you were talking about the huge size of the Chicago theater scene that of a passage in your book where you say that in the 70s it was still possible for one very energetic person probably to see almost anything.
Uh-huh.
And now it isn't. And the book traces that explosion. I'd be interested to hear you talk about if you can describe the trajectory. You know, where are we now? What's different? What's new as compared to when you were there at the beginning? What do you see as important trends?
Well, everything is new again and everything is old again in the growth of Chicago theater. The one thing that's constant about it is it keeps growing. It keeps refreshing itself. Thank goodness for that. I think the beginnings of what we now have as a resident theater scene in Chicago probably occurred in the mid-1970s with the sudden infusion of youthful energy and inspired by a desire to get out there and produce shows. You got such theaters as Wisdom Bridge, Victory Gardens, The Body Politic, all of which were young companies founded by young people who wanted to plant their flags in the soil of Chicago and show that they could produce a good show. And this was a revelation to a lot of people who were weaned, as I was, on going to shows downtown.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever went to a show on Lincoln Avenue. What was on Lincoln Avenue? Nothing. But beginning in the early 60s with the reinvention of Hull House Theater by the great director Bob Sickinger, and of course by the Second City, and by such things as June Pekosik's Kingston Mines Theater, the idea of having a theater run by and enacted by local residents, homegrown, homemade, and in your own backyard theater grew. And in mid-1970s, this took root in several pioneering and enterprising mid-sized theaters, 100 to 250 seats. And that tradition has continued ever thus from then until 2008, 2009. The idea of starting your own theater company almost directly out of coming from college is still very paramount mm-hmm. in Chicago. And it's important that this energy be refueled every year because some of the theaters pass out of existence. Some of the key players move on to other things. But you still have this infusion of tremendous vitality from a predominantly youthful place. At the same time, Chicago has been good enough to enable some people to actually make a living here, not a big one, not a big Broadway star living. You're lucky if you make a living wage in Chicago, but that's another story. The point is that a lot of people are able to settle down here. I would say 25, 30 years ago, you'd be hard-pressed to find a character actor, middle-aged or mature character actor. Today, there's plenty of them around.
Right.
If you wanted a middle-aged character actor in the 50s, why, you'd get a young guy and put gray in his hair, and that would be what you'd have. But today, you've got a wealth of good characters. That's where Deanna Dunnigan came
from.
Sure,
of course.
She was touring in a show, Broadway show, and decided to stay in Chicago and built a career here until finally she got the role of a lifetime in August Osage County. And that's building a community of directors, designers, actors who decide to put their roots down in Chicago. The evolution of that has been continuing from the 70s on. I don't keep an exact track, but every year there's, you know, at least a dozen new theaters
right.
who decide that they're going to show the world what they can do.
And we lose 11.
Yeah, yeah, sure. They definitely want to let people know that, you know, hey, Steppenwolf, what's that? We're the greatest. You know, we can show you what real theater is really like. And this happens as it has always happened since those early days of the founding of the off-loop movement. It happens in the strangest places, in converted supermarkets, in converted chocolate factories, in a former bowling alley, in a storefront, whatever. I mean, they make do with what they have, make do with the materials at hand and the talent at hand. There is a shortage of theaters in Chicago. That's space.
Right.
I mean, real, honest-to-goodness space where a young company could do. But somehow they always manage to find a space where they can put on a show.
Well, you might have been able to talk about a Chicago style, say, in the 70s or the 80s. Do you think that's still true? Is there something that's distinctive
If you talked about a Chicago style, then you were talking about the sort of rock and roll theater that Steppenwolf exemplified at that time, the Gonzo Theater, whatever you want to call it, this kind of raw energy pouring out on the stage, which was very powerful and very important in development of Chicago theater. And today you still have that energy. Who still have that commitment as well as energy. But it's not just funneled into crude, raw, brute force material. It's developed in classic theater. You have Chicago Shakespeare Theater, for example, and you have theaters that specialize in the classics beyond Shakespeare, and you have theaters that do contemporary cutting-edge stuff that is not so much mainstream realism that some of these early shows typified. So the energy and the ensemble commitment of a lot of these theaters, that still continues, but it's splayed out into many, many niches and many fields besides just that kind of brute force that I think was exemplified by the production of True West that Steppenwolf did, where John Malkovich and Gary Sinise beat each other up every night in Sam Shepard's play.
Right. Is there any gaping hole that you see in the Chicago scene?
Well, I wish we could get a little more of the flavor of theaters outside of Chicago. We had, from 1986 to 1994, we had the International Theater Festival of Chicago. Which
some of us,
that.
For instance, saw Robert Lepage at that, which was,
yes,
you know,
yeah,
a revelatory experience.
They had the Kenneth Branagh's Renaissance Theater Company came in. It was wonderful productions until they ran out of money. But you have also in Chicago a lot of theaters that do classic work. Nonetheless, it's important to see what other folks are doing in other countries and in other cities. To some extent, that role has been filled by Chicago Shakespeare Theater with its World Stage series, in which they bring in people from France, London, Greece, wherever they go. And that's been a very important opportunity for Chicago audiences to see something that's different from what they're used to seeing in resident theaters in Chicago. However, you know, good we are, we don't want to become provincial, and we want to have a sense of international influence in Chicago. And the Goodman Theater is about to, besides its Latino Theater Festival, which it does every 2 years, they're about to bring in some other companies from outside the United States. I mean, other companies from outside the United States into the Goodman for their performance spaces. So the more of that, the better, I think. Even the Harris Music Theater and Dance Theater, has dipped a toe in that, especially in dance, with where they brought in. They're about to show the San Francisco Ballet, for example. They brought in Mark Morris Company, yeah, and so on. All these things to show us, you know, that there are other interesting things going on.
Right. It's not all here. What we have is wonderful, and there's wonderful stuff that's very different elsewhere. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I think we probably need to close down. I just want to give you an opportunity to plug your book for a minute. I believe there's a new edition coming out.
Yes. In 2009, probably summer or fall of 2009, a paperback edition will come out, which will have an extensive afterword in which I bring the book up to date. The book was published in 2004. And so the afterword that I've written takes it from 2004 up to the present. And that's been a kick for me to do because it's re-energized me and reignited my enthusiasm for theater in Chicago. It's going to be a good addition to the library, I think.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Richard.
Okay. Thank you.
Hello, Chicago, and welcome to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Moat, bringing you the theater news for the week of September 15th, 2008. Goodman Theater starts its new season on a high note with the greatest music of the 20th century in Turn of the Century, a star-studded romantic tour through the American Songbook directed by Tony Award-winning director Tommy Tune. It's the latest work from Marshall Brickman and Rick Ellis, the team who brought us the smash hit Jersey Boys, and stars Jeff Daniels and Rachel York. Turn of the Century tells the story of a modern cabaret duo, Dixie and Billy. At the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve 1999, the duo is catapulted back in time to 1900, before the hit songs of the 20th century have even been created. Turn of the Century starts September 19th at the Goodman Theater. Tickets can be purchased online at goodmantheater.org. Amelia Earhart, Jungle Princess, is the focus of Joe Stead's latest article on Theater in Chicago News. He interviewed artistic director Andrew Hopgood, executive director Gary Tiedemann, and playwright James Asmus from The New Colony. They give details on their theatrical fantasy about the infamous historical figure and her mysterious disappearance. Amelia Earhart, Jungle Princess, opens on September 29th at the National Pastime Theater. For more information and your chance to read this article, click on over to Theater in Chicago's news section. Former artistic director of the Stratford Shakespeare Festival, Richard Monette, died Tuesday in London at the age of 64. Monette served as artistic director from 1994 to 2007. Stratford is currently the largest repertory theater in North America and a popular destination for Chicago audiences. A public celebration of his life will be held on October 20th at Stratford's Festival Theater. Chicago will miss him. Jersey Boys is undergoing a slight cast change. Last Sunday night was Jared Spector's final Chicago performance as Frankie Valli. Now, Cory Grant will be taking over the role on September 27th. Grant, a Winnetka native, was formerly a longtime ensemble member of the Broadway production. Here's looking forward to another great run. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago News podcast. Remember, you can find us here every Monday with more news ready for you to enjoy. So, until next Monday, that is the theater news from Talk Theater in Chicago, and I'm your host, Dustin Moat. Thank you for listening to the Talk Theater in Chicago podcast. I would like to thank Richard Christensen for giving us the honor of interviewing him this week. I would also like to thank Ann Nicholson Weber and Mark Meyer. Without them, this podcast would not be possible. And also, I would like to thank you, our listening audience. Remember, we will be here every Monday with a new episode ready for your listening pleasure. So, until next Monday, I'm your host, Dustin Moat, reminding you, Chicago, to keep talking theater.